Here at Renew Energy Partners, climate change is very important to us, and so is beer. In every episode of the Green Beers podcast, we taste a beer together. We talk about the brewery and their sustainability practices. And then we talk about a topic relating to our work in decarbonizing buildings and mitigating climate change.
Count it down. 3, 2, 1. Welcome to Green Beers. We've returned.
We're back.
I'm Mike Savage.
Definitely back.
I'm Charlie Lord.
I'm Austin Shiner.
It's been a minute.
We are without.
Is that the order? Did I introduce myself before you in the old days, Mike? Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. I started. I jumped right into it. We're a little rusty. It's been at least a year, maybe 2 years. I mean, we did a pandemic episode back in, I want to say, April of 2020. And the world's changed a little bit.
But it's good to be back, We Ani Punganor, for those of you who are longtime pod listeners, we lost him to a solar firm, and he's with us in spirit. He was our dedicated beer olfactory expert because he couldn't drink. So
the olfactory component is critical. It's important to have a specialist.
Exactly.
We'll be missing that section from this part going forward. But
the three of us soldier on.
So we're excited to be back. Today we're drinking a Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, one of the most sustainable beers.
Mike.
Without further ado.
We are pouring the Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. Shall I introduce the series that we're launching today?
Yes, as what can be seen on the screen. In our new multi-medium platform.
So we are beginning today an 8-part series on, actually, I think it might end up being 9-part series on the most eco-conscious breweries in America. We will be highlighting those breweries, and we will be talking about their specific sustainability programs, a great way to explore the ways in which companies of all sorts are tackling sustainability and decarbonization. So the Green Beers now takes its fullest form in reviewing the top 8 or 9 eco-conscious breweries in the country. This idea is courtesy of longtime listener Luke from just outside Salt Lake. So Luke, thank you for this idea. We think it's fabulous. And let's drink a toast to Luke.
To Luke.
First one on our list, the Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. Start with the beer, pale ale. I think this was their first beer.
Some say it was really the first craft beer in America.
Yep.
And it's just as good as the first time I had it as an infant in the late 80s. It was
This was not your first beer.
Is that no, right?
It was your first good beer.
Perhaps. It's possible. Yeah.
It's a good beer, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's often the first thing that home brewers try to clone, quote unquote, and you a bit of pride in getting as close as you can. I'm not sure exactly what kind of hops they use, but it's not
Cascade.
Cascade, there you go. Yep. Well,
they were the ones that first brought Cascade hops.
Yeah, it says in the back. There it is.
Into craft brewing, named after because the founder loves the mountains. And it's now obviously a hops that many, many people use in IPAs generally.
I don't know anything about hops, if I'm being honest.
Some of our listeners will know that hop. But it's a Cascade hop. I think it's a beautifully balanced beer. It's a pale ale. Yeah. It's not an IPA. They're not going for that sort of hoppy explosion. There's almost a caramel feel the taste.
Yeah. Drinkable for sure.
Yeah. But not too sweet because it has just that right balance of a little Christmas from the hops. It's a great beer. And, a lot of beer lovers get caught up in the latest craft beer fad and microbrewery down the block. Mm-hmm. There are 4 microbreweries within a block of each other near my daughter's apartment in Brooklyn. 4. And I think we can, I think this is a reminder to balance the search for the new with a recognition of the old standards in the craft brewery space, because there's a reason they launched a revolution, right?
Yeah. I think in this new iteration of green beers, I'm coming out with my own new metric. my metric is, how many beers could I drink before getting sick of it? I think this is a fiber. I could have five Sierra Nevada, not a six pack, but five.
In one sitting.
You know, like, to give you an idea of where this scale sits, right? The Alchemist, the Heady Topper, that's like a half.
I was gonna say, you'd be at the hospital. Quarter.
Yeah, drinking half a Heady Topper is impressive.
Yeah, I would give this a straight up 9 on the flavor scale. People who have listened to the pod before will remember that I suffer from great inflation, but. Mm-hmm. And as you'll hear, they get a very high score on sustainability. So this is going to be above a 9.5.
Wow.
Overall. Yeah.
Boy. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's well earned. I agree. It's extremely flavorful. Hard to find fault with anything. Agree also, Mike, that you could drink a bunch of them. It would qualify as a session. You know what? In today's day and age, I bet if this beer were invented today, it would be labeled a session IPA. That's it. In fact, I'll stake my reputation on it.
Yeah.
It's hoppy enough that the IPA brand is a lot bigger now than it was in the 80s when this came out. But it's drinkable enough you could just have a bunch in a row. So that's really what it is in today's lingo, I think.
Yeah.
It's a 5.6.
So it's just over what a place like Notch would categorize as session, which is 5 and under, but it's way under what you're getting at a lot of these.
Cool. So anyway, yeah, flavor, I'll give it an 8.5. I will. That's great.
Yeah. I think, you know, going for, I just think my metric is how many could I don't know.
Okay, I love it. Austin and I will stick with our current rate. And then I think our listeners will appreciate the how many could I drink, both enjoy and actually consume in a single session.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
Like, I love it. I don't know anything really about beer besides how many can I drink? You know, that's.
I think this is very valuable. Some people will want the raw scores from Austin and me. Yeah. Other people are just looking for what happens if I pick up a six pack.
Yeah.
Great. All right. So moving to their sustainability score, and in this format for these eight. We're going to do the beer tasting and then a discussion of the sustainability strategy at each brewery. After we do this series, we'll get back to topics in our industry. But I think we're going to find that we're talking about topics in our industry by looking at what's happening at these breweries. On the Sierra Nevada website is a sustainability map for each of their breweries, one in Chico, California, and one in North Carolina. Frankly, unbelievably cool graphic in my view. They highlight every measure that they're implementing for sustainability on the campus on a wonderful interactive map, and then you can click on it and learn more. And so just a great way for people to learn in a fun way in the context of what they love, beer, about, you know, the latest in sustainability technology.
Yep. I think it's a great visualization of sustainability and what it takes to be a eco-conscious, you know, brewery. I think let's just go and, you know, everybody let's just pick one. We're going to throw solar, you know, off the table here for conversation, because that's, you know, bare minimum these days.
Yeah. So we're going to do sustainability map. Spin the wheel. Spin the sustainability map wheel here. Yeah, Austin, you start.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll spin my cursor here, and spin it around, and just coincidentally land on CO2 recovery, which is extremely cool. Of course, the process of alcoholic fermentation. It's all about producing, right? The yeast eats the sugar. And it produces alcohol, and the byproduct is CO2. It's amazing how frequently CO2 is the byproduct of otherwise useful activities.
Hence, shall we say, global warming.
It's really terrible. It's a really, really, really a terrible thing how often that's the byproduct, and with fermentation as well as combustion. So So they made clear, and this is, I've never heard of another brewery doing this, although it's possible some others do. Instead of venting naturally produced CO2 from fermentation, we recover it, clean it up, and send it back into the brewery to pressurize tanks and assist in packaging. Recovering our own CO2 reduces operating expenses as we rarely have to purchase CO2 and eliminates hundreds of delivery trucks on the road. It also contains, our recovered CO2 also contains less oxygen than commercially available CO2, improving the quality of our beer. So it's not clear, they may use it actually for carbonization of the final product to some extent, but as they made clear, they also pressurize it and use it not in the beer itself necessarily, but to assist in packaging and pressurizing tanks. Regardless, this is, you know, it's one thing to emit the CO2 and then say, if you're a major corporation, you would emit the CO2 and say buy an offset or then pay for carbon capture and storage once it's already entered the atmosphere. But that's, of course, relatively inefficient. If you can capture your CO2 before it even goes into the atmosphere, then you're a step ahead. And it seems like, amazingly, they've managed to do that here. And that's pretty next level.
It is next level. And, you know, it's interesting. I had dinner last night with an old friend who's been in this business for a long time. He ran the state environmental agency here. He was the regional administrator of EPA. And this is no wild-eyed sort of activist, not that there's anything wrong with wild-eyed activists, but you know, you sort of expect to hear things from certain people. And he was very clear that the road forward from here on out to tackling climate change and minimizing long-term impacts from everything he's hearing from the technical and the scientific community involves things like capturing CO2, things like managing the atmosphere. I mean, we have to be two or three steps ahead. Everybody in this country, or a lot of people in this country, are excited, and rightfully so, about the explosion of new technologies, some of which we'll probably talk about now. And the real game is two steps beyond that, to how do we pull CO2 out of the atmosphere? How do we recover it on the back end? You know, so this kind of forward-thinking stuff is really interesting at this brewery and incredibly important in terms of the long-term play. So as you say, Austin, this is next level, and it's got to be sort of baseline going forward.
A little unfortunate that we have to rely on sucking the carbon out of the air versus stopping it from coming, but you know, that's where we are.
We put ourselves behind the eight ball.
Technology is advancing where hopefully that becomes not only feasible but economical.
I do love the fact that this reduces their operating costs. I just love it. I mean, build a company where people think about sustainability and look for opportunities, and then celebrate the number of times that actually makes you a more profitable business, right?
Yeah.
Love that. All right. Mike, you want to spin the wheel?
All right, let's see where we end up. I'm just going to go right to electric vehicle charging.
Nice.
There's so many things about electric vehicle charging. Right, as you can see here, they have implemented a solar canopy installing electric vehicle charging to support their employees who want to drive electric vehicles, which of course eliminates tailpipe emissions. I think if you look at electric vehicle charging, it's actually a very interesting dilemma that we're seeing. There's huge market demand for electric vehicles, but there's actually a very limited number of vehicles being produced, but they are coming, and how do you prepare for them? And the challenge with electric vehicle charging is the amount of electricity that they take. It's a lot. It's just equivalent to a commercial load, and trying to put those all over the place is, if you ask a utility for a certain amount of power, they basically have a heart attack, because that amount of power is 100 to 300x at your current home. And if you start putting these all over the place, when we start talking about the electrification movement, it's all great in theory until you start asking a utility company to put power lines everywhere
and produce that amount of energy.
Electric vehicle charging at the workplace is a great solution, because it is a slow charger, requires a smaller amount of power versus, you know, the interstate, your retail spots where you want a very high dense. So this is a great commitment to their employees, who out in California has over 10% market share of electric vehicles, and that's going to triple over the next few years. So being proponents of not only their personal carbon emissions, but the carbon emissions of their employees, which is a great thing.
Yep. And I think this this site map points to another key feature to pick up on your point, Mike, about this sort of the chess game we're playing in trying to implement these breakthroughs. As you said, Mike, the grid can't sustain the amount of fast charging that people are looking at needing or wanting if we're going to meet our electric vehicle goals. And one of the things we've been talking about here at Renew is that almost any commercial business that wants to add EV charging is going to run right up against the load capacity limits of the grid. So what they've done here in tying this to solar is address that big issue. You cannot, in our view, implement EV charging without asking, where's the power going to come from? And can I connect it to batteries so that I can generate the power for my EV charging on site, or at least use batteries so that I'm charging the chargers themselves when power is more plentiful and less expensive? So having the solar and the EV charging there on that same parking lot, very powerful concept, and really, again, next level in terms of saying it's not enough to throw out a bunch of chargers because you're going to run right up against the grid issues and you're actually going to cause more trouble than you're solving.
It's a good reminder that as much as electric vehicles are extremely exciting and a critical component of the energy transition, they won't replace the old standbys of carpooling and simply reducing your demand overall,
right?
Which is that if every single person who currently drives an internal combustion car switches to an electric vehicle, goodness knows how we'll produce all that electricity, as we're saying. That's a heck of a lot of solar and wind. So still, even for a company as advanced technologically as Sierra Nevada, you still would want to have an incentive for employees to carpool, because otherwise you just won't be able to charge all the cars.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, old school and new school come together.
Yeah. Low tech, old school. Yeah, the lowest tech option is still totally relevant. Just reduce the demand fundamentally.
Absolutely. All right, so I'm going to spin the wheel here to electrified trailer parking.
I never even heard of it.
Yeah. We love this one. In the Sierra Nevada context, what they're doing is they're plugging their trailers in and electrifying them to keep the beer cold before they go on the road. That is essentially replacing diesel power generators, which is what powers most refrigerated trailers in this country. The California Resources Board has put in a regulatory program to phase out diesel-powered refrigerated trailers. Each of those trailers, as currently designed with diesel, emits 50 metric tons of carbon per year. If you think about the number of trailers rolling across the country with cold storage, that is a massive carbon footprint. And so this is a step absolutely in the right direction to minimize the amount of carbon emissions from any cold storage trailer. We love this specific example because we have a partner who's developed a solar and battery powered refrigerated trailer. Mm-hmm. And we are in the process of working with his company to roll out solar and battery powered refrigerated trailers to replace the diesel trailers. That has applications both as in this particular use case where they're parked trailers, keeping the product cold, and also, of course, on the road. You need the charging infrastructure for days when the solar won't do it. And so that relates back to the conversation we were just having about getting charging infrastructure in place. And this is a great example of all of the small ways you can make a difference that add up to tackling a decarbonization. And I love this technology. Solar on the roof of the trailer, a battery that can be powered either by the solar or by plug-in, and you eliminate that 50 metric tons of carbon that come from the diesel generator for every cold soda you buy or frozen food, or for that matter, six-pack cold beer. So, yeah.
What I love about Sierra Nevada and this web page is that they're, you know, trying to just hit on. They're doing all the little things, right? Mm-hmm. You have companies who, mm-hmm. right, there is an easy way to say you're green, right? You can get a virtual power purchase agreement. You can get an offset and eliminate everything. But you're still at a local level producing carbon emissions. And here they are taking step by step all of the little actions that on their own just might seem like they won't add up. But here, you when you add 10, 15 of them, you realize there's a lot that a company can do even while producing beer to make a substantial impact to the environment.
Yeah, you can see, of course, one aspect of it, too, is it's nice to have a large footprint physically if you have a lot of roof space and a lot of parking. Of course, as we know at Renew very well, it's especially challenging in the densest urban areas where, of course, you can't put this much solar on the top of a skyscraper. But yes, this is a brilliant model for the semi-urban or even rural environment. And there are analogous things you can do in the cities. It just gets even a little trickier. But it, I mean, you know, they're doing everything you can do with a big footprint like this. It's great to see.
I totally agree. And I love Mike and Austin, the call out of the VPPA, you know, announcing your net carbon zero by buying one big chunk of solar from the desert in Arizona. Not a bad start. Let's not pretend that that's all of it.
No.
And I'd love to see a business that's saying, we're going to do every single little piece that we can. There's 15 bullets on this map that everybody should check out, each of them contributing to lowering the footprint of this business. Yeah.
No, and don't get me wrong, we need the utility scale solar and wind project,
right.
But we also need local level, right? Because what you're really, those utility scale, you're reducing the actual carbon emissions of that local area where it's happening and versus your site, which is still producing everything that it's producing. And it's kind of a, you know, it's all right, you're net zero, but are you net zero for a, you know,
specific community?
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Wow.
I think we just killed our first pod back.
Welcome back, Green Beers. This is really fun.
Yeah,
not tooting our own horns, but that was pretty interesting if you ask me, I gotta say.
We don't even need a marketer.
Yeah.
No, this was really fun. Thanks again to Luke for the idea. We've got 7-8 more of these to go. I can't wait to see what we find at the other of the 8 or 9 most eco-conscious breweries in the country.
Yeah, to our number one fan, Luke, we appreciate you.
Truly, thanks. Thanks.
See you next time.
Bye.
Cheers.
Green Beers is brought to you by Renew Energy Partners, your partner in building decarbonization. Decarbonizing your building is good for the earth and it's a smart business move, but it's complicated and it can cost you a lot of money. Our goal is to decarbonize your building while saving you money, so all of those retrofits pay for themselves. Learn more at renewep.com.